This podcast of the Parents Journal is made possible by Huggies Diapers and Pull-Ups Training Pants.
Our guests today are Steve and Annette Economidis. They're founders of the Home Economizer newsletter and authors of America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money. Steve and Annette, I know you guys have been living a frugal lifestyle for 26 years, for the whole time of your marriage. What do you see as some of the best benefits that your family has experienced from a frugal approach to living?
Well, for one, we don't experience the stress that a lot of other families experience. Our marriage is not fighting over money all the time. And, I mean, we've got other areas that we have to work through in our marriage, but finances is not one of those typical conflict areas for us.
One of the other benefits is, you know, when the economy slows down like it is, because we don't have a debt load we're carrying, our overhead is lower, so we can survive easier with a lower monthly payment than other people can because they're carrying this huge debt load. So it really makes getting through a tough time a lot easier.
Right, and even though, you know, people are being hit by groceries and gas right now, we are able to cushion what's going on because we've learned to live frugally. And we've practiced so many other frugal habits in other areas that when the economy is really struggling, we may feel slightly pinched, but we're not going to feel like we are treading water right now.
Well, in the opening of your book, you have three principles for getting you right on the money. And these seem like such good, solid principles for families to adopt. Tell us about these three main ideas to get on board with a more frugal lifestyle.
Right. The first one is to live below your means. I think because of our credit-saturated society, everybody is buying. It's like buy now, pay later. And if you do that with too many things, then before you know it, your payments are just killing you every month.
And you don't have enough money to buy the stuff you need for today.
Right. So when we're saying to live below your means, we're saying, okay, you know, if you're earning $45,000 a year, live on $35,000 or live on $40,000 so that you've got money in savings and you can cushion what's going on. That's the first one.
Our second one's avoid debt like the plague.
Right.
And, you know, the attitude of, oh, you know, if you don't have the money, it's okay, we'll finance you. That just makes my blood boil because I don't want people telling me, oh, it's easy to go ahead and go in debt. What I do is I look at this and I go, if I don't have the money for this particular item, then I'm going to find a way to get it for the money I do have. And it employs creativity rather than credit. So we avoid debt. We kind of laugh when people say you can finance things because we know there are ways to get the things we need for less and we don't have to finance them and pay for them over months and months and months.
Right. And the final of the three is to embrace the thrifty lifestyle, which means not sacrificing quality, but finding all those quality items for the best price, the lowest price. Millionaire Next Door is a book, and the folks in there said that the most frugal people actually were very similar to the millionaires because they owned some of the same items, nicer cars, nicer houses. They just didn't have the debt that went along with that because they figured out ways to make it a game and find what they needed for less money.
See, I like what Annette says when she says make it a game, and that's what it's become for us. You know, we needed a lawnmower last week. Our lawnmower died, and we were having a party, and we needed to mow the lawn. Now, we could have borrowed one from our neighbor, and we thought about that. But we found deals out there either on Craigslist or actually ended up at Sears buying a new one with a coupon that we found online. And it was a phenomenal thing. It was a challenge, and we knew we were going to save some money. We just needed to look around.
And how much time and effort does it really take for you guys to get creative to live that thrifty lifestyle?
It depends on what you're looking for. I mean, obviously, the larger ticket items you're going to spend more time on because you stand them to save the most.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once it becomes a way of life for you, I don't know, you don't even think about it. It's sort of like brushing your teeth.
You know, you get your sources down. Most businesses have regular vendors that they go to that they've developed a relationship with over time. So when they need a new product or a refill on things they normally buy, they go to that vendor. Well, same thing with us. For instance, clothing. We have a hierarchy of clothing stores, and we talk about this in the clothing chapter of America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money. And it's basically the first stop we make is a small thrift store that benefits an adoption agency. The second stop we make, if we don't find what we want there, is a large national chain thrift store. And then if we don't find what we want there, we go to a consignment shop that has higher-end stuff, and that's where I found my tuxedo, my After Six tux for $20. You know,
right.
So we have this already set. So when we go clothes shopping, it's a no-brainer. We have our sources, and we go out, and we can probably spend less time finding the stuff we need than you would go into the mall. For instance, we took five people clothes shopping for a TV shot we did a while ago, and within an hour, we found complete outfits for everybody.
If listeners haven't been in a consignment shop or used a thrift store or something like that, they may not have any idea of the quality of clothes and the range of styles you're going to find in there.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, they've got every season of clothing. It's color coordinated. It's size coordinated. You walk in there, they have dollar days for clothes. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we've gone in there with news anchors, they have found a $150 pair of blue jeans. I don't even know all the brand names. My kids kind of know them better than I do. And they'll find them for $10 in the thrift stores.
Goodwill is another great source. They've really upgraded their image. They've upgraded their stores. And you can find things very easily there.
Now, let's talk a little bit about attitude, though. You have one chapter in your book that talks about thinking different can change everything. What kinds of words of wisdom can you offer as a starting point about attitude to achieve this kind of thriftiness in the family that we're talking about?
Well, one of the biggest problems we have in America is we spend a lot of time watching television, looking at magazines, and reading about the stars. And I'm not talking about the stars in the sky. I'm talking about the stars in Hollywood. And we think that their lifestyle is everything we want. Boy, they drive the fancy cars. They wear fancy clothes. They go to all these parties, and they end up divorced. They end up in lawsuits. They end up losing their houses. And they aren't as happy as we think they are. And what we've done is we've put them on this pedestal that is the epitome of life, and it's not. And the truth is we've got to learn to be content where we are. And that's probably the biggest attitude, and it's a hurdle to get over. But if we stop saying that everybody else has a better life than us,
or everybody else has it easier,
right?
It's going to go a long way to changing our attitude about possessions and money.
And if we learn to be good workers, you know, because we're not always griping and complaining about what we don't have, then we will get promoted as we learn to work hard and become excellent at what we do.
Our guests today are Steve and Annette Economidis. They're founders of the Home Economizer newsletter and authors of America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money. What else would you like to say in terms of that grass is always greener philosophy or mentality that gets many of us in trouble?
Well, there's one of the articles we wrote in the book dealt with ideals. And we feel like you've got to be idealistic. You've got to have some bedrock principles, and we talked about the three before, you know, just embracing the frugal lifestyle, avoiding debt, and living below your means. But what we've come to the conclusion is that you've got to be solid and realize that you can stay debt-free. You can find what you need. You've got to believe that with all your heart, and it will happen because the more you keep your mind open to looking for deals, to being content where you are, those ideals will serve you well.
And everybody needs to start at the bottom of the ladder. The kids today, you know, they look at what their parents have worked so hard for, and they look at what their parents have achieved. And all these 20-somethings want to start out in management. And I understand if you've got a graduate degree and you've been in school for a long time, you may not necessarily have to start at the bottom of the ladder. But I think the best management are the ones that do start at the bottom of the ladder. And they learn to work hard, and they learn to know the business that they're part of, and they work themselves up within their company.
And the principle in the home is teaching our kids to manage small amounts of money, not giving them $50 a week like Money Magazine said in a survey that the average teenagers are getting. That's, you know, thousands of dollars a year. We need to teach our kids early on to manage money that they're responsible for, that they've earned from the home. We have a whole chapter on teaching your kids about money, because that's going to cost families a ton if they don't.
And we have an awesome kids training system for money on our website, americascheapestfamily.com.
Let's take a look at what you did with your own children in the family to try and impart some of these principles and some of the real-life actions that they could take about frugality. What really worked?
Well, for one thing, starting them young, and all, you know, our littlest one, we have five kids, and our littlest one, Abby, she was running to the table for payday before she even knew what money was all about. And, you know, she started by getting coins for the chores that she did, and she would sit there. It was so cute. She would say, "Now, what's this one?" And Steve would say, "Well, that's a nickel. That's 5 pennies. And what's this one? That's a dime, and that's 10 pennies, you know?"
And what about this payday? What was linked to the payday in your family?
What we tied payday with, we call it Money Smart Kids is what we call the whole system. And we tied it to chores and attitudes. And basically, each day the kids could get 4 points. And the first point was the morning point. Get up, make your bed, eat your breakfast, and do it all without complaining. Get dressed and all that stuff. You know, first things first. And you get that morning point. Then it was the school point, which was do your school well. Put your name on your papers. Do the homework you had to do. Get your school done well. And get your school point. Then we had chore point, you know, and everybody had certain assigned chores throughout the day that they had to do. And then the last point was roundup. Get your stuff cleaned up at the end of the day. Round up your stuff and put it away. And if you get 4 points a day, by the end of the week, you've got 20. On Saturday, you can get 3 because there's no school. That's 23 points. And it's not really that complicated, but we basically paid the kids for doing these things with a good attitude. And if they did a couple of extra things that we didn't ask them to do, and they ended up with 25 points for the week, we gave them a bonus. We gave them double pay.
And then were they allowed to use this, quote, pay or their allowance, so to speak, in any way they saw fit?
Well, there was some negotiating there. In other words, if it was a big dollar item, they needed to come to us and say, "This is what I'm thinking about buying. What do you think?" And most of the time we would let them buy what they were thinking about as long as they had researched it well and thought through it carefully.
And they were buying this with their own money.
Right. But we really told them, first off, they had to divide their money into 3 envelopes. We gave them Tyvek envelopes that were indestructible, and they had to divide it between give, save, and spend. They gave 10%, save 20%, and they could live on their spend 70%. When they turned about 9, between 9 and 11, they had to start buying their own clothes. Now, that was the slap of reality because, you know, when we get our paycheck, we have to pay bills. We have to pay the mortgage. We have to buy food. And to give a kid allowance and not require anything of them is just not real life. It doesn't prepare them for leaving the nest and being on their own.
So at age 9, they started using their money, their spending money, to pay for all or part of their clothes.
Well, actually, what they did is they just added another envelope and they're added another percentage. So it was still 10 for forgive and 20 for save, and then they'd split what was left. So it was usually like 30-40, maybe 40 for clothes and 30 for spend.
And how did they do managing that money for clothing then once they got to hit the age of 9?
Well, because we showed them how to get the most for that money, because we showed them thrift stores, the mall was not a temptation at all because they saw how much more they could get at the thrift stores, and they could look nice and they get complimented on their outfits all the time. They were more than happy to take that route for shopping.
When you have a limit, so if a kid only has $20 in their clothing envelope and they've got to go out and buy some blue jeans and a couple of tops or something like that, they're going to look at that money and they're going to go, "Gosh, I can go to Savers and I can get 3 pairs of jeans and a couple of tops, or I can go to the mall and maybe buy the cheapest pair of blue jeans they've got."
Let's take a look at some of the other expenses that typical families have. I'm thinking about groceries and gas. Now, what tips do you have in those two areas of spending for families?
Well, I don't think families are taking the time to plan anymore. And what I tell folks is, I mean, this was something our mothers and our grandmothers did all the time. If they'll just sit down and plan out a dinner menu for the week, it really doesn't take that long. And people usually can pull together a lot more items than they're used to, from tacos and spaghetti and meatballs and hamburgers to, like in the wintertime, soup is great, macaroni and cheese. There's a lot of very, very simple beginner meals that people can make if they feel overwhelmed with this whole thing. And we have an actual audio CD just dealing with grocery savings, and it's so helpful.
But the key with planning is that it takes you from the impulsiveness or the distress of 5 or 6 o'clock when you've gotten home from work and you're tired and you go, oh, my gosh, I don't know what to make for dinner. Let's just
go
to the drive-thru. We'll go drive-thru somewhere and pick up the stuff. And families are spending $200 to $400 a month on fast food and eating out. And that's a budget buster. So if you come home and you go, gosh, right now I've got the chickens pulled out or I've got something else that's been in the crock pot since I went to work this morning, this is going to be easy. I've got dinner already taken care of. It takes it out of the mental panic, and it gets you done, and it saves money and time.
What about gas?
Well, there isn't a lot you can do with gas. You can be more efficient in how you run your errands. And as far as our kids' activities go, instead of taking them someplace and coming home and then going back and picking them up, what we usually do is we stay. You know, if there's music lessons or like Abby had her 4-H club last night, I just brought the budget to balance, and sometimes I'll bring mending and sometimes I'll bring coupons to clip, and I just go and I stay there and I get stuff done.
We do the same thing with Little League. We sit there and I'd either write an article while I was sitting there, I'd balance a checkbook, we do correspondence. You know, you take things with you, and if you go and stay and then drive home, you've saved half the gas.
Now, just briefly, we're almost out of time, but I'm wondering about budgeting. You know, a lot of families, I don't think, even sit down and write a budget. What words of wisdom could you say about making a budget?
Budgeting is a difficult thing to describe over the radio. We have a whole chapter in our book that takes people step by step through doing that. But it helps you to live below your means, and it is the single most important tool that we have used in 26 years to help stretch our money so much further than we ever thought it could go.
The simplest budget is to take the three areas that most people normally overspend, and that would be food, clothing, and recreation, and do those in cash. So each payday that you have, when you get paid, go to the bank and take out a predetermined amount of money in cash for those three areas, food, recreation, and clothes. And put them in an envelope, label them, and when you go to spend, you take the money out of the envelope. When the money's gone, guess what? You stop spending. And you control those three areas, you'll be miles and miles ahead of where you are right now.
We've been talking with Steve and Annette Economidis. They're founders of the Home Economizer newsletter and authors of a book that's called America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money.
The executive producer and host for the Parents Journal is Bobby Connor. She's also the author of Unplugged Play, No Batteries, No Plugs, Pure Fun. This podcast of the Parents Journal is sponsored by Huggies Diapers and Pull-Ups Training Pants.